All right, the Krug Show. John Chapman is in the house on a Wednesday afternoon slash evening, 4:49 West Coast, 7:49 East Coast. Welcome aboard. We got a lot to get to right now. Off and running on the Krug Show on a Wednesday. Chapman in the house. We always love talking ball with Johnny, and we're going to get to it in just a second. Of course, we're brought to you by Pig in a Pickle. The best barbecue in all of Northern California is Pig in a Pickle. Check them out. They're in Emeryville. They're in Corte Madera. Soon to open in Petaluma. That's right. They'll be open in Petaluma. Downtown Petaluma is their third location. Check them out. They're fantastic. Also, the Krug Show is presented by Prize Picks, America's number one sports picks app. Prize Picks is super simple. You just pick more or less on player stats or even game outcomes and build your lineup. It's available in most states, including California. So if you haven't checked it out yet, use the code HMA. HMA. And when you play $5, you get $50 in lineups instantly. If we have some time, we'll do a lineup today. Johnny, good to see you. How are you?
Man, I'm awesome. I feel like the entire offseason this year, the vibes are just awesome. I remember last year, and we were trying to project like the 53-man roster, and we do like a roster countdown series every year, 1 through 91. And it was just, it was boring. There wasn't really a lot of competition or projection or, man, like, who's going to fill out the wide receiver room? We knew last year. This year, it's much different. And so there's a lot to discuss and break down. And I feel like so far, I know we're still early in the offseason or the quote unquote dead period, but I'm having a trouble getting all the content out. Whereas last year was, all right, what do we want to do next? Let's try to create something new. No. There's none of that. There's so much to talk about. So pumped to be on here with you, Larry.
Well, you know, it's funny when you do content creation around a team like the Niners for the whole year, the leanest part of the year definitely is after the draft, but before training camp. But, you know, I really kind of pride myself on trying to find something new to talk about every day and not being repetitive over and over and over again. It gets a little repetitive into and around the draft because of that's kind of the nature of that. But today there was a great article that I think is kind of plowed new ground, if you will, on the 49ers. And that is in The Athletic from our good friend Matt Barrows, who's got an article up right now where he talked to 49er Vice President of Player Personnel, Tariq Ahmad, and kind of just looked back at the draft. And very interesting piece. And we're going to talk all about it. But, you know, the Niners, you know, one of the things that I thought was kind of interesting, we both noticed it up front, was that got a little glimpse into kind of their process. You know, we got a little bit of a glimpse into it when Kyle Shanahan went on with Rich Eisen, but you know, a lot of people really didn't like that when they heard that, because they're like, wait a second, the coaches make highlight reels, and that's where you start your evaluation process. And yet it came out in this article that's not entirely true, is it?
Yeah, the Rich Eisen interview was incredible. One, because Kyle opened up a lot more than he does in interviews and press conferences normally. Rich Eisen's the freaking man. So like, I get it. But the biggest takeaway I had was really the first time you see a prospect, Kyle Shanahan, is when an assistant position coach brings you a highlight reel, not the scouts, not the GMs, not any of that stuff. Well, in the conversation with Matt Barrows today on The Athletic, again, great article, amazing job by Barrows always. You know, RJ Gillen talked about how there's actually three sets of tapes per prospect. The position coaches, the scouts do one, and then also RJ Gillen and the assistant general managers put one together. So that made me feel like, not that anybody cares the way Chapman feels, but it was the first time where I was like, okay, this is a little bit more of a thorough process than what Kyle Shanahan put out there on the Rich Eisen show, where it's like, what the hell are the scouts doing? I felt like it was like Office Space. What would you say you do here? So I liked it. So immediately, and that was, you know, in the intro part of this article, I was just like, oh, good. Okay. It is a little bit more of a sound process. That is exciting.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the findings in this piece. We'll start with Deshaun Stribling, the second round pick out of Ole Miss. You know, I guess Tariq Ahmad said the one trait that stood out at every stop, whether it was Wazoo or Oak State, he finally finished up at Ole Miss, was that Stribling has great hands. He had 9 drops in 5 seasons, only 1 drop last year. The quote was, "We felt he could really pluck the ball. I thought he was excellent at just ripping the ball out of the air on contested catches." This is great news because to me, you know, I know he can run and I know the guy's got, you know, down the field ability. I know he's got quick hitch ability. The question I would have is, could he catch through contested catches, through a lot of contact? And it sounds like that's what they like the most about him is that, you know, he's got big 10-inch hands. They're not just big hands, they're pretty strong hands as well.
I don't want to say my favorite thing, but definitely one of my favorite things about Deshaun Stribling and watching the tape, like, we graded over 40 wide receivers before the draft process, went through, ranked all of those. I did not have Deshaun Stribling anywhere near the number 33rd overall player, but he was one of our rush crushes, which we do this for 13 players every single year that are just like my favorite guys. That it's not so much about where they're going to go or whatever, just you don't have to worry about him. And Deshaun Stribling was one. And you saw it in 3 separate schemes, 3 separate divisions, 3 separate teams, where the dude just has natural pass catching hands. And one of our things whenever we're watching wide receivers or even tight ends and even running backs is how you receive the football. That catcher's triangle. Do you alligator arm it or do you go out and extend? Can you catch through contact? And I'm glad that you brought up the 10-plus inch hands. This dude plucks, and he goes and high points it consistently, which, you know, his body, that's huge that it comes through at 6'3", 210. He's got the size. He's got all those things. And whenever you look at a Juwan Jennings, who was slow, didn't have the change of pace. Yeah, he could block like a behemoth, but the hands, while they were good in contested situations, you look at Juwan Jennings, whether as time at Tennessee before he was drafted or even with the 49ers, his drop rate has always been high. Really, really has. And so the two issues with Juwan Jennings was he can't stretch the field vertically. He just never had the speed for that. And I think he was second in the NFL on interceptions when targeted, and that was with Mac Jones and Brock Purdy, because a lot of the balls kind of deflect off of his hands. Drops were an issue. So you're looking at the two biggest issues with why Juwan Jennings was not a quote-unquote elite wide receiver. Speed, Deshaun Stribling runs a 4.3. Hands, Deshaun Stribling, one of the best drop rates in this entire draft class. So you're looking at the same body style, but the inefficiencies that Juwan Jennings brought to the table, Deshaun Stribling's got an A-plus in both those categories, speed and hands.
Yeah. So he's got run after the catch ability. He also has blocking capability. So, you know, I definitely think, you know, if looking at that pick, at least from afar, it appears to be a really, really good, you know, option there for the 49ers. Now, I thought this piece was also really good. The next guy, they got into Romello Height, and just how much we know about Chris Kocurek and how much he's a big Texas Tech guy. I knew there was no chance in hell that Chris Kocurek drafted the wrong guy on their front, that he knows that thing like the back of his hand. And sure enough, I guess one of the things that impressed the Niners about Romello Height was the motor, you know, that his motor just, you know, Tariq Ahmad says he does not stop. It's incredible watching him strain. It's one of the many things that I absolutely loved about his tape. he was their favorite. He says, "I thought the combine interview was awesome. I fell in love with him at the combine. He's serious. I mean, you could see how much passion he has. He comes on a 30 visit. And it's the same thing. He just loves football." And, you know, he mentioned that, you know, Texas Tech had David Bailey. They had Lee Hunter. They had other guys. But according to their reports, it was Romello Height who was the alpha of the group. He says, "We talked to teammates of his. He was the guy they'd want to bring with them. He was the guy they believed in. It's exciting that everything Texas Tech told us about his passion we've seen out here the last few weeks on the practice field." So the motor, the first step, but it's the non viewable traits of Romello Height are some of the things that they love the most.
And it shows, you know, I watched so much Texas Tech tape this year, and I hate that. I'm a Longhorn guy. But, like, that defense was just stacked. Every single player that played on the defensive line got drafted. And, you know, you're watching David Bailey, the number two overall pick. And the whole time you're watching David Bailey, which he's incredible, you're like, who the hell is this guy that's half a yard up the field every single snap on pass rush? Like, he is always consistently there. It was Romello Height. Yeah, we did a show, I think it was 2 weeks before the draft, 10 players that the 49ers will draft. We nailed Deshaun Stripling, and we got Romello Height. Didn't get either one of them where the 49ers were projected. I had them getting Romello Height the second and then trading up into the third to get Deshaun. Well, different approach, but they still got there. And whenever you watch Romello, this was the biggest glaring weakness, I think, on the entire 49ers roster, was this lack of this speed bend edge presence in the defensive end room. You just did not have it. The defensive end room for the 49ers is strong, but Nick Bosa, I mean, you're talking about Sam O, Mikael Williams, Keon White, they're your bigger buck style ends. You didn't have this smaller speed demon burst guy. And now you do, and you've seen that. And one of the pieces that I really, really liked in this Matt Barrows article was just how they loved how all the teammates, because again, Romello Height, so many different schools throughout his tenure, all of the teammates and coaches spoke so highly of him. And you saw some of that whenever you interviewed him, and like you saw some of the questions come across, and it was just like, oh, yeah, this is a dude you want to go to war with. This is a guy that you want to fight with. So the fit, the pairing, the need, all of that just seemed to just sync up. You know, we did a competition for everybody got five guesses to pick who the Niners would draft. We had like 80 submissions. Nobody got more than one right. And the only one that everybody got right was Romello Height. Like, that was the only one that was submitted in any of our competitions. So shout out to Romello Height. This was the one somewhat predictable match or pairing that the 49ers walked away from. But yeah, he's a fun player, and I think he's going to have probably the largest rookie impact of this entire rookie draft class for the 49ers. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel, pick up the kids, they're out of school, adventure, it's all out there. For others, juggling it can be tough and can lead to being overwhelmed and counting down the minutes until the kids are back in school. And many worry they're wasting their days of sunshine. Well, therapy can help better understand their needs, feel more confident about setting boundaries, create a version of summer that actually feels good. And with over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. Their average rating is 4.9 out of 5 for live sessions based on over 1.7 million client reviews. BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the United States, and they do all the initial matching work with you for the therapist. Short questionnaire helps identify your needs, your preferences, and over 12 years of experience in the industry leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right the first time. But if you're not happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from all of the tailored recommendations. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy, sign up, and get 10% off at betterhelp.com. That's betterhelp.com. You might have heard the phrase, dirty hands, clean money. It's a blue-collar saying that has been around forever. The idea that hard, honest work is how you earn a good life and everything in it. Troll Co. It's a clothing brand built around that. Started by two guys out in the oil patch who worked hard their whole lives and could not find anything that represented people like them. So they made it. Workwear, tees, hoodies, hats. And here is what I keep thinking about. The faithful rep red and gold with real conviction. Not because it's easy, but because it means something. We are the best fan base in sports. That is the exact same energy Troll Co. runs on. You wear it because of what it stands for. And I was raised from blue collar work. My father ran a construction crew his entire life. My oldest son works in the oil fields in Texas. My youngest son, he's going to become a firefighter. Like, this is who we are. And so when you think about what you sacrifice most, people don't see. But you go to trollco.com/rush. That's trollco.com/rush and use code RUSH25 for 25% off your first order. Go check them out. Amazing company, amazing people, amazing product. Wonderful thing to support. Again, that's trollco.com/rush and use code RUSH25 for 25% off your first order. Hey, Niner faithful, if you're looking for tickets to see the 49ers play this season, Tick Pick is the destination for the best deals you'll find on tickets with absolutely no hidden fees. Tick Pick guarantees the best price on tickets to every NFL game and beyond. Download the Tick Pick app and use code Niners, N-I-N-E-R-S, at checkout to save $10 on your first order. Again, that's code Niners. Get your tickets ready today to cheer on the team with the rest of the 49ers Rush community. And all of our events for the 49ers Rush road trip are sold exclusively on the Tick Pick app or tickpick.com. Just search 49ers Rush.
You know, I'll say this, when you talk to him, you can see the guy is just really, really fired up. And on the practice field, he's really dialed in. He led the way in the mini camp, the rookie mini camp. He looked like a veteran who was kind of showing everybody else how to do it. Let's talk about Kalon Black, because he also was mentioned in this article. And it's funny, the guy played 41 snaps, in the national championship game, January 19th. And yet he still showed up at the Senior Bowl the very next week for the practices. And Tariq Ahmad says, I think he wanted to prove something. He wanted to prove that he could be a real NFL running back. And I thought it was a tremendous stage for him. Ahmad said that Black got high marks in football character. Indiana's strength coach said Black was one of his favorite players he's ever coached. The Niners also thought he was the best pure runner in this year's draft class. One of, I should say, the vision, the reactions, the way he finishes runs, the contact balance. So they all just love the way he ran the ball. Kalon Black, you know, it's funny. This was the pick that made a lot of people crazy. And yet, you know, when I heard the name, I just loved it, because this was a player that I really did love throughout the process. I think he's going to man a lot of roles. I do know that other guys look more impressive, like on the, you know, at first glance, but this guy is more trustworthy as a blocker, short yardage. And trustworthiness is a huge prerequisite to get on the field at running back for this franchise with Bobby T and with Shanahan. And it's like, you just don't get on the field if they don't trust you. And we've seen that. And that's why they got a slew of backs sitting around that don't run the ball. I think they're going to use this kid quite a bit. I like Kalon Black. I think he's definitely going to beat out James for number two.
That's, again, we were talking about, you know, this offseason, that's going to be fun. Like that is huge, because Christian McCaffrey gets a lot of rest time through camp in the preseason. So we're going to find out. And I think the answer is going to be relatively obvious. Now, Jordan James didn't overtake Isaac Garrido. I think it was the Colts game. That was the first time that they swapped on the depth chart. So like, it took Jordan James a good 10 weeks into the season before he earned that number two role. Now, Christian McCaffrey stayed healthy, or I would say number three behind Brian Robinson, but Robinson's gone now. So that pecking order is going to be fun to see. Now, you brought up blocking with Kalon Black. That is his best thing that came off on tape, the most consistent thing that came off on tape. And that is one of the main reasons why running backs, rookie running backs in the NFL, don't get playing time. You're going to get my quarterback hit. You're going to ruin a third down or a play, you know, whatever. That's a major issue. You don't have to worry about that with him. And he's old. He's the oldest running back drafted this year. Well, he's already 24. He's going to turn 25 his rookie year. But the coaches love him. People don't realize Kurt Cignetti, before he went to Indiana and, you know, won the national championship, he was at James Madison. He didn't bring a lot of James Madison players with him, but he brought Kalon Black. And so you're talking about one of the premier highest paid coaches in all of college football saying, this is my guy. Was with him for 3 years at James Madison, brought him for 2 years at Indiana, trusted him. You look at what he was able to do in the college football playoff, and then didn't take any time off and went right to the Senior Bowl. The only player that, you know, made it to the college football playoff and made it to the semifinals or championship and still went to the Senior Bowl and played. That says a lot. And the 49ers value the Senior Bowl more than any other team in the NFL. 6 out of 8 of these draft choices were all Senior Bowl guys. That carries a lot of weight for them.
One of the things that about Kalon Black, not only did he not skip it, a lot of guys would, but it was that he, at the end of a grind of a season where he was big throughout the college football playoffs, he didn't just show up in Mobile. He showed up and he had great power and explosiveness in his legs. He still looked like the freshest back with how crisp his cuts were, how powerful he was moving the pile. His first two runs in the Senior Bowl, he carried the entire pile, 3 and 4 yards in each carry. I mean, he really stood out. I understand it was somewhat of a reach, but, man, I'll tell you, I think it's going to wind up being a great pick. Let's talk Grayson Halton, but before we do, let's jump into our Prize Picks lineup for today. I've already made the lineup. Prize Picks is America's number one sports picks app, and the reason I like it, it's simple. You're just picking more or less on player stats or game outcomes, building your lineup, and you're in. No complicated stuff, just what you think is going to happen in the game. Use code HMA. Play $5 and get $50 in lineups instantly. The link is in the description. All right, this is what we'll do. We'll move us to the corner, and we will share the screen, and I'll let you see our Prize Picks lineup, and then we will move over here, make sure that we get the right configuration so we're all configured correctly. Which is right there. All right, now there we go. All right, so this is what we're going with our Prize Picks lineup this week. We did a 3-pick power play. $5 pays us 30. We have Myles Garrett with more than 14 sacks. We're going with the season-long projections. Puka Nacua less than 8 receiving touchdowns, and JSN less than 1,324.5 receiving yards. If we go 3 for 3, our $5 turns into $30, courtesy of our good friends at Prize Picks. And thank you to Prize Picks for being a proud sponsor of the Krug Show. We appreciate them. They do an amazing job. Thank you, Prize Picks. All right, Grayson Halton. Let's talk about Halton for a second. I think this might be their best pick, the defensive lineman from Oklahoma. And I thought this part of the article was interesting as well. Tariq Ahmad told Matt Barrows that the Niners, when they were looking at different offensive linemen, they wanted to have, you know, to see offensive linemen against the best. And Oklahoma had one of the best defensive lines in the country with R. Mason Thomas and obviously this kid, Grayson Halton. So they watched a lot of Oklahoma's defensive line when they were looking at offensive line prospects that they wanted in the draft. And they kept, you know, noticing Halton. Ahmad says, and he just kept showing up over and over and over again. He said he really got off the ball, got on the edge, was able to win quickly. He's be disruptive, all the acceleration and get off that we're looking for. Ahmad says, I think we did really well on the D line this year. I think last year our first and second round picks, Alfred Collins and Mikel, were good. And I think if Mikel didn't get injured, we'd be really, really excited about how he finished the year. And now it's exciting adding this next group to that one. We got younger. We got more explosive. We got more pass rushers. Yeah, this is what I'm most excited about as well. Grayson Halton, Romello Height, James Thompson, Mikhail Kamara. I just feel like they got some players up front, and they already had some decent players up front. So it was good to see, especially the pass rushing tackles, Halton and Odighizuwa added.
Yeah, you look at what they did just in 2 years in this defensive tackle room, a complete makeover. You know, last year you draft C.J. West and Alfred Collins. They're not your pass rushers. They never were meant to be that. They're your run stuffers. But you didn't have the pass rush guys. So what do? You trade for Oso Odighizuwa. You pick up Grayson Halton. And it's just like, man, Grayson gets to step into the best situation in this team. He gets to just shadow Osa. Very similar body types, very similar play strengths, very similar attributes across the board. And it's just like, hey, this guy's done it in the NFL for 4 seasons. You're going to learn and just watch. And you're Osa 2.0.
Do what he does. Yeah, exactly. Do what he does.
just watch and learn and replicate, because the 49ers do. They rotate. They have an Alpha and a Bravo group, and then they have their NASCAR package as well. Grayson's going to be out there in that Bravo group. Like, he does not have to – this isn't a player that you have to insert into the starting lineup right away, and it's like, oh, we'll see what happens. No, no, no. He gets to go across an easy trajectory path to blossom into what he can become. And so, like, you have this instantaneous – look, dude, the pathway is set before you. Just watch and learn. Do what you can and grow into whatever role, like, is going to be the most comfortable. I just – this is just one of those picks, Grayson Halton, where it's just like – you don't need to be smart. Not that I'm a smart guy. Larry, I'll leave that to you. But, like, you don't have to be smart to figure out how it's going to work out. This is going to work. This is going to work. You just come in. You're going to get 20 snaps a game for probably the first 6 weeks of the season, and you just get to rotate and do your job and just disrupt and cause problems. And Grayson Halton is so consistent at that. Has been at OU for years and years and years. Always flashes game in, game out, no matter who they're playing. I like this pick. I like the value. I thought that this was, you know, everybody get upset about reaches and whatever else. The Grayson Halton pick, that is the one where it's like, all right, that is the huge value pick of this draft class, where should have been off the board in the 90s, 80s probably. You got him at 107. Awesome pick. I love the Grayson Halton. It's my favorite as well.
Yeah, I mean, I feel really good about that one as well. A lot of people feel good about Carver Willis. Hey, Matt Maiocco predicts Carver Willis is going to start at left guard. So some people think he's got some real upside. I think he's going to be a starter too. I just don't think he's going to be a starter until Brendel's out of there, and I think he'll be the future center. But the Niners put a lot on Chris Foerster, you know, on when they're looking at draft prospects on the offensive line. And Foerster's got a good relationship with Jed Fish and the UW people. UW and the Niners have a very much of a kinship as far as coaching staff to coaching staff, and they play a similar system. And the Niners really like this player. They liked his demeanor. They like his intellect. They said what struck him is that he was smart and mature. He turned 24 last month. They think he's a future center. Tariq Ahmad said he's a bright, impressive kid. For offensive linemen, that definitely stands out. You've got to be consistent. You've got to be mature. You can't make mistakes. You got to do the right thing over and over and over again. So they like Carver Willis, and, you know, he's kind of a, you know, this guy entered college at like 250 pounds. I think he was like 140 pounds in high school. So he's not a natural, you know, 300 pounder. He's worked his way to 300 plus pounds. But I do think he could be their future at center.
I agree with you there. I'm not buying into the Carver Willis is going to be the starting left guard anytime soon. It is a major projection. Dude's only played tackle his entire career. And whenever you move from tackle to inside, you sacrifice some of your athleticism, and you've got to focus a little bit more on anchoring and not getting pushed back too much in pass pro. That's the biggest weakness in his game. So for that to turn into a strength, I want to see it first. And like, I hope that it does come, but like, he's a projected center to me. The athleticism, the short arms, it's just not there. But you watch Carver Willis in the run game, and you're just like, oh, hell yes. Like, he is aggressive, aggressive, aggressive. And he gets movement consistently. The problem is he's a waistbender. And the problem is he doesn't have the length. So, you know, tackle, that's out of the equation. He even talked about that. The pass pro is what's going to keep him, the consistency or lack thereof in the pass pro. That's what I'm scared about. But if you tell me right now that Carver Willis is the starting center next season, man, I'm in love, because he brings what Jake Brendel does not. Jake Brendel's pass protection, that's his strong suit. Not much in the run game. He can get to where he's supposed to block, but blocks for a count, doesn't get any movement whatsoever. Carver Willis and Jake Brendel are literally the antithesis of each other. And so what you're going to want to look for, can the pass protection become consistent with Carver Willis? That is the key. And if it doesn't work early on, then it's just, hey, learn the guard position, which is, this is what they do with all kind of rookie linemen. And then eventually you could take snaps at center or tackle elsewhere, but you got to learn the guard spot first.
You know, they go on and discuss Ephesians Prysock, the fourth round corner out of Washington. And it's funny. It's, you know, the Niners coaches have such a huge impact in their process. Is that a good thing or not? Well, it's a good if they it's good if they pick the right players, you know. But Prysock is a 6'4 corner, 80 plus inch wingspan. And according to Tariq Ahmad, he said the defensive coaches absolutely loved him. He would have been in the conversation for them very early in the draft, very, very early. So they obviously fell in love with this kid. And you can see why when you see him, because he's really long and tall, and he's a rare body type at corner. And Prysock stood out to the Niners at the Senior Bowl. They put a lot of credence in the Senior Bowl. Tariq Ahmad said he was top two, or, you know, in my opinion, of the corners that were there at the Senior Bowl. So I don't know about this one, because they took him over Keith Abney, and I thought Abney was higher rated across the board in the same, you know, he played well for ASU. Prysock's a little bit more projectable, with more projectable length and size. I thought Abney's tape was better. I thought his play was better. I thought his production was better. I didn't see him losing as many steps in transition. Prysock is dreaming on the traits, hoping that it's all going to be there at the end. But there's a lot of penalties in college. He has a hard time mirroring receivers up and down the field. Heck, Dante Whitner thinks he ought to be a safety. But they loved him, and they loved him from the Senior Bowl and the defense. I mean, if the defensive coaches, they took him in the fourth round. I think he might have been projected later than that. If they wanted him really early, what round? Round two? You know, and that, so it's like, then you got to kind of wonder, maybe your coaches are, maybe you're, one of the issues you're having is that your coaches are getting into the process late. They're not seeing every prospect potentially, and maybe they're falling in love with a few guys too much. And maybe this is an example of that. This pick worries me, because it's like, if it works out, oh yeah, you might have one of the best corners in football. But to me, the film was really, really just okay, even though he's big and long and rangy, and you're like, wow, look at this guy. But he just has a hard time mirroring receivers, you know, down the field without losing steps. He gets really grabby, and this is at the college level. So I don't know. I see lots of penalties coming for Prysock, and I think he might be the guy, even though he's a fourth-round pick. I would not be surprised if he's the guy that does not make the team. But where are you on him?
Yeah, you know, we break down the all 22 tape on every single player. That's up on the 40irishrush.com if you want to check it out. That's how we pay the bills over here. But man, he loses early a lot. His technique is not consistent. His feet, like, he tries to jam, which with the 6'4 corner with that wingspan, you're like, oh, this is going to be, you know, a press man corner. He's really bad at it. Opens up feet the wrong way. Doesn't use the correct offhand jam consistently. But if you're going to bet on a player late in the draft, I want an all-out football stud, or I want a freak athlete. This is a freak athlete. Yeah. And this is the compensation pick that the 49ers received for Talanoa Hufanga signing with the Broncos. And so we know how Shanahan sees those comp picks. They're just extra dart throws. He does not value them the same as regular draft picks, which is interesting in and of itself. But the one thing I will say about Prysock that is consistent on tape, he gets himself in a world of trouble early and then somehow just like makes these freak closed plays where he gets back into phase. And like, it's, if he could learn, stop losing early and putting yourself in these terrible positions through the first part of the play, through increased technique and just understanding route concepts and what's coming and through watching film, like, okay, the athleticism, the speed, the reactions, all that's there. It's just that first count and a half and reading the wide receiver, man, he's just gets lost a lot. Now you're going to a cover three, cover six quarters type look where it's a lot more kind of bell technique and whatever else. So maybe that's going to be good. But he, again, he's another guy that doesn't have to play right now. Prysock gets to just sit behind. And like, man, can you imagine Ephesians Prysock lining up behind Renardo Green and, you know, Demo and being like, dude, I'm 3 inches taller and I'm faster and, you know, all these things than these guys. If I just figure it out, this is my job to lose. But this is a boom or bust pick. Now, I agree with Whitner. You start at corner, and if it doesn't work out, you fail him to safety. So there is even a backup contingency plan with Prysock. And worst case, special teams. Like, there's a lot of areas where you could see the pathway for him panning out. But this is a project pick. And back into the fourth round, compensation pick, freak athlete. I don't mind taking dart throws. Again, I want one of two types of players at that point. I want the all-out football IQ, you know, poor athlete, or I want the freak athlete that hasn't put it together yet. And Prysock fits the latter.
Yeah, I mean, these last three guys, between Prysock, Duggar, and Enrique Cruz, they're all what I would call wild day three stabs at guys with massive traits. And we'll see. You know, Prysock could be the best corner in football, or he could get cut. You know, is he a dog, or is he just a guy who's got a big frame? We're going to find out this summer. Jaden Duggar was their fifth round pick, and he's equally intriguing. I mean, this guy, according to Ahmad said Duggar was a steady mover up the team's draft board in the spring because he got high grades from two of their key figures. He got the national scout Chip Flanagan, who cross-checked the linebackers, gave Duggar strong marks at the East-West Shrine game. And then the cross-check, and then his also came back with his cross-check grade that was high. And at the same time, then KJ Wright, who's the Niner linebacker coach in his first year as the full-time linebacker coach, you know, he really likes Duggar, and he's got a very similar body type to KJ when KJ was coming out of college. But Duggar's interesting, John. He played safety at Georgetown. He moved to outside linebacker at Louisiana, middle linebacker last year. He had 125 tackles. It sounds like the plan is to play him off the weak side and probably on special teams. He, to me, this is, you know, his film is all over the place. His highlight reel is awesome, but his play is far from awesome. And when you look at his film and you grade him out consistently, you can see he's an awesome raw athlete, but you can also see the raw part really, you know, is an overwhelming characteristic. So I think Duggar could be the best player they drafted, or he may get cut. He may just be a special teamer that never can play from scrimmage. I'm not even sure if he's a linebacker. He might be a defensive end in Raheem Morris's scheme. What do you see with him?
Yeah, I like your analogy of just film being all over the place. You know, whenever I coached and we would go through a tape with our players, I'd give them a score sheet and we'd grade every single rep. If it's amazing, +2, +1, 0, -1, -2. And man, I'm going through that Mizzou tape, which is like his highest quality opponent, you know, Louisiana against SEC Missouri. And I'm telling you right now, he probably finished that game with like a negative 35 score. Like, but he's got four plays that are +2, where it's just like, oh, hell yeah. Like, if I just cut those four plays and put them in succession, I can put it on YouTube and put it out there and be like, oh, he's a future all pro. But the play before, the play after, not in the wrong hole, can't diagnose plays. He was out of pocket at Mike linebacker, which was new for him last year. He's the last to make the calls. You've got, you know, he's trying to call play strength and all that stuff, and the nickels are responding. They're responding before he's making his call. Like, he was just lost. So the tape, it's not there. You're playing three separate positions in three consecutive seasons with two different schools. Put him at Will. Put him at Sam. You ain't got to think too much. Learn a couple things. And here's the reality. He's not playing this year early on. That linebacker room is stout, man. It really, really is. So pull up a chair, listen, keep your mouth shut, learn, figure out this sport, increase your football IQ to the point where your physical traits, which are exemplary, can finally take over. Now, the good news is if he does make this roster, you're going to be on special teams only and you're going to be a backup. Like that's what's in store for him in 2026. If some of this catches on, who knows? Because there's not a lot of linebackers that look like him. I do think Edge would probably be that Sam, you know, kind of overtype linebacker is where he should wind up. But I think that's a little too much for him. Just let him play Will, figure it out, learn behind Dre Greenlaw. There's enough there to like, but man, if you watch the game tape, yeah, my axiom is this. If you want to fall in love with a player, watch the highlights. That's like reading somebody's dating profile. You're only getting the good. But if you want to interview their exes and their former bosses that fired them, watch Game Tape. You can't hide anything on Game Tape. His Game Tape is rough, man. It is rough.
Well, I mean, it shows what he is, which is a guy that hasn't played middle. He hasn't played any position for more than a year. So you got to give him some time to grow. Obviously, Raheem likes something about him. The traits are off the charts. We'll see if they can turn him into a player that's useful in some way in their scheme. Enrique Cruz, you know, they just kept saying he's very gifted. He's very gifted. Tariq Ahmad said he has a lot of top 10 percentile talent in his body, the acceleration, the explosiveness. He's very physically gifted guy. Ran 4.94 at 313 pounds, 35-inch vertical, 3 inches higher than that of the top tackle in the draft, Spencer Fanu. 11-inch hands. I mean, this guy's really, you know, Cruz, his former coaches gave them good scouting reports. Forster worked him out in the run-up to the draft and loved him. Ahmad says Chris loved him on tape. Then Chris came back from the workout even more convicted, and everything we've seen so far is really encouraging. So they love his athleticism. I guess the question I would have is, how do you keep him? You have Colton McKivitz. You have Trent Williams. You just signed Vidarian Lowe, who's going to be your swing tackle. You're probably going to wind up cutting Austin Pleasance. How do you create a spot for a fourth offensive tackle that's never going to play? Or do you cut Luke Farrell and make this guy your blocking tight end? And now you're stealing an extra roster spot there. I think how they get this guy, you know, this guy's got too much talent to slide him through waivers at the cutdown. So is he going to make the final 53 when he has no chance of being one of their top three tackles? That's going to be a nifty trick. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how they retain him through camp and into the season.
Yeah, fifth rounders make the roster. Like, let's just be honest. Like, a fifth round pick is 179 overall. Still, they make rosters. Sometimes sixth rounders get cut, and most of the time seventh rounders get cut. Fifth rounders don't get cut. Like that just doesn't happen. But you look at this roster, and it's like, man, who's the odd man out here? Now, Austin Pleasance had some damn good tape last year. And shout out to you, Larry. You were on that the entirety way. I was 100% wrong. I thought he was too heavy-footed and whatever else. He gets in there game time, held his own well. But he was on the practice squad a lot. Nobody ever claimed him. And so the question of how do you keep all these guys, in particular Enrique Cruz Jr., this is going to be one of those Shanahan-specific, he broke his arm the last play of the game, kind of like Jacob Robinson, which I do think he broke his arm. I remember watching him walk off the field. But, like, this is one of those mysterious injuries, like, we're going to have to put him on the pup and shut him down for the year. You're going to have to get creative. And Shanahan, they do that. And so I'm not saying he's going to get injured. I'm saying if an injury doesn't happen to the point where it makes sense roster-wise for that 53-man, there's going to be a couple guys where they're going to have a closed-door meeting and say, hey, your ankle's swollen, just so you know. We're turning that into the NFL today. So I think one of those mysterious whatever where you get kind of creative with it, won't be shocked if that is Enrique Cruz, Jaden Duggar, Prysock, or even Carver Willis. I would not be shocked if it's one of those. I don't know. Do you think Shanahan does that? Because I do think the 49ers do that every year.
Make up some reason to slide guys around?
A little bit.
Well, absolutely. But, you know,
I think every team does.
Here's the challenge this year. Are you going to be able to, in the same year, keep both Curtis Rourke, a third quarterback, and Enrique Cruz, a fourth offensive tackle?
It's the cross position. That's where it gets troubling, right? Because it's easy to say, oh, just keep four tackles. Well, if you do that, you can't keep three quarterbacks, or you can't keep six linebackers, or you can like somewhere.
It's a passing league, and you got a bunch of receivers you've invested in. You've got, you know, this is where the Niners, I hope the best 53 guys make the roster. And it's easy to say that. But this year, I'm most concerned about it because they did go and sign three free agents on the offensive line and draft two offensive linemen. So, I mean, that's five new offensive linemen. Well, five new offensive linemen.
You're not keeping all that.
You can't keep all five of those guys. You signed a bunch of corners. You know, I don't know if you can keep that depth, but it's a passing league. You got a bunch of receivers. You're going to cut your fourth round picks the last couple of years. It's going to make your drafting look that much worse. So they've got, you know, they're going to have some, it's going to be a very difficult roster to cut down, I think. It's going to be hard for Rourke to make it and for Enrique Cruz to make it. there may be a trade. There may be a trade at some point. They may have a guy or two that is too good to cut, but not good enough to make it.
And we'll I would say if that's the case, you're looking at wide receiver. That's where it should happen. Like, you've got nine wide receivers and you only use five. So like, whoever loses that punt return, kick return job, whoever does it, like Jordan Watkins, Cowan, you know, whatever else, like that's where I think it's going to get. You brought in a lot of, you brought in five wide receivers. You brought in five linemen. Like you said, like, this is going to be fun. And so the competition level, may the best man win.
It's wide open. Evans, Kirk, Stribling are on the roster for sure. You would think Pearsall as well.
Yeah.
That would be four. So if you keep five, everybody else is for one spot. Jordan Watkins, DeMarcus Robinson, Will Pauling, Wesley Grimes, the undrafted guys, you know, Cowing, Junior Bergen, Malik Turner, they're all battling for one spot.
And DeMarcus, I don't know how you cut DeMarcus Robinson. I don't know how you would do that.
I don't know how you cut Jordan Watkins. He's got 4.3 speed, and the guy scored 9 touchdowns 2 years ago. I don't know what the heck happened last year. He had the high ankle sprain. He just kind of fell out of favor. But, yeah, I mean, they're going to have a hard time paring this roster down, and it makes me think that, you know, one or two of these guys could get traded. It could be Curtis Rourke. You know, is Curtis Rourke going to play really well? And if Curtis Rourke plays really well, is he that automatically mean he makes it, or does that – you know, does that mean that they trade Mac Jones? I mean, I don't know. It's a lot of moving parts here. You know, for this final 53 on the final 53 man roster. Dave Lombardi had an interesting stat today. He said Brock Purdy was the NFL's most accurate quarterback targeting open receivers downfield, but he had the second lowest rate of passes targeting an open receiver downfield. Should I have to say that again?
Well,
Brock Purdy was the NFL's most accurate quarterback targeting open receivers downfield. Okay. He was very accurate when he was targeting open receivers down the field, but he had the second lowest rate of passes targeting an open receiver down the field. In other words, if you got open down the field, Purdy hits you, but the Niners didn't get open down the field, which is probably why Mike Evans and Christian Kirk and Deshaun Stribling have been brought in the offseason, and why, you know, JJ's gone and other guys are gone. They didn't get any separation at all. I was looking at the list here, least accurate quarterbacks when targeting an open receiver 10 plus yards down the field in 2025. The least accurate were guys like Michael Penix, JJ McCarthy, Mahomes, believe it or not, Bryce Young, but the best was Brock Purdy, who completed 72.5% of his passes to receivers who were open 10 plus yards down the field. So, you know what it tells me, John, those numbers tell me, is that if the Niners receivers can get open down the field this year, we may see Brock Purdy have an MVP type year.
Yeah, one of the most, you know, highest passer yards per game last year was Brock Purdy. He just didn't play enough. It's there, and you're rebuilding the entire offense through the wide receiver room. Didn't draft a tight end. You did draft Kalon Black in the third round, but like the impetus that has been put on the wide receiver position, I would argue probably one of the largest, worst to best position groups in the entire NFL, not just the 49ers, is that 49ers wide receiver room. DeMarcus Robinson was the best playoff wide receiver the 49ers had. Like, I understand Ricky Pearsall is awesome, but he wasn't in the playoffs. He sure as hell wasn't. DeMarcus Robinson was your number one. Now we're having conversations. He might not even make the roster. So your
That's a great
best,
point.
Like, you've brought in competition and top tier and draft picks. You name it, you name it, you name it. it's going to be a heavy passing team, especially you look at just how inefficient the run game was last year. A lot of that was because you didn't have any downfield threats. Well, now you bring in Mike Evans, one of the best vertical wide receivers in NFL history, and you bring in Deshaun Stribling, who runs a 4.3 and a 6.3. You now have those options. And so if teams are going to continue to play the 49ers the way that they did last year, go ahead. We're going to beat you through the air. If we can't run the ball efficiently, I don't think that they abandoned the run, but you look at the amount of pass plays called, whether that was Mac Jones or Brock Purdy last year, they were airing it out. And I think that's going to continue.
Couple last thoughts before we call it quits here. Nick Wagner says, he talked about when he believes George Kittle will make his season debut. I think all these guys have this so wrong. I get it. Kittle wants to be back week one, but that's just something that you say. You know, that's just something that you say. He tore his Achilles in January. All right. Why would he return in September? But here's what Wagner says. Kittle and the 49ers remain optimistic that he can be back potentially as early as week one against the Rams. I'm told that may be a little too optimistic, given the fact that Kittle wouldn't have played in a long time going into that game and would be coming off a 19-hour flight to Australia, spending a week over there, and then going back into a game. The Niners do have three consecutive home games after they return from Australia, which looks like more of a reasonable target somewhere in there for Kittle to return. This guy, go get yourself another tight end and let this guy return in November. That's the way to play this. He's indispensable. He's one of your best players. He's maybe a future Hall of Famer. You're planning on playing deep into January. And if you're not, then you shouldn't even be in the organization anymore, because the organizational stated plan is to win the Super Bowl. And that's to play in February. So why do I want a tight end who means as much as he does to play in, I don't want to say meaningless games, to play in September games, when that would be 10 months or a year is a good gauge for recovery time for an Achilles. 10 months would be November 1st. So why would he return before 10 months? I don't get that. And what, this guy's 33 years old and you use him a ton and he's rooted in the ground with his cleats on every play. And you're going to make this guy's, this guy should not come back until after Halloween. I don't know what these guys are talking about. This sounds as almost as crazy as the Ayuk's going to come back in week one last year.
Thank you. Or the Christian McCaffrey has a good chance to go week one. You remember that one in 2024? And then he didn't play at all for 10 weeks?
Weeks and weeks. These are like Niner. Is it Niner PR testing the loyalty of some of these guys or what? I don't know. But I mean, it's like, really? If you had to bet every penny that you own on George Kittle coming back a certain week, you're going to take week one? I'll take like week seven, week eight. And even then, it'll be too early.
He ain't going on the Australia trip. And that's the thing. Like, I would be surprised if Bosa and Mikel don't go. Like, that trip is going to be killer. And so, like, I would not be shocked if the 49ers do more pup kind of designation for the immediate part of the thing. And that might be the way that you get a lot of these guys on the initial roster, where you keep some of these guys coming off ACLs and Achilles, keep them on the pup for the first three games. And so, like, okay, you're going to miss. You look at the schedule, and it's like, all right, so you're going to be missing week one against the Rams. That sucks, but this long trip. Then you have the Dolphins-Cardinals. Miss the first 3 weeks. Come back for the Broncos game, all right. Like, and that will allow you, for every player that you keep on PUP or NFI or whatever, that lets you keep another player on your 53. And then whenever you do bring back Kittle and Mikel and whoever else, well, whenever you waive a player at that point in week three, it's a lot harder to shuffle the chairs and to claim that player off of waivers than it is at the 53 initial break, because these guys have been with your team. So I think there's going to be a lot of roster gymnastics because of that Australia trip. And I do not think that there is any way, shape, or form that George Kittle post 30 Achilles tear on 7.5 months. I get the story sounds awesome, and I think Kittle truly does believe he will be back. That's just George Kittle's mindset. Like, that's fine. That's I just don't see it. I don't see it. And I could make a video. George Kittle's going to be back week one. Guarantee it. Blah, blah, blah. And I'll have thousands of views. But that's bullshit. That's not going to happen. Just like Ayuk was going to be ready week one, or CMC week one, or like you said, the 49ers are very trustworthy with a lot of things. Injury reports have never been one of them in the Kyle Shanahan regime, ever.
I swear, I will be shocked if he's there week one. Absolutely and completely and utterly shocked. All right, let's finish on this. There's always something interesting out there. This, I caught this today. This is on Niner Noise. Are you familiar?
Yeah.
You're familiar with Niner Noise?
Yeah. Shout out you to are Niner familiar. Noise. Yes.
Okay. All right. I didn't know. Are you familiar with Michael Haney?
I do know the name. Yes. Okay, I believe so we've met before.
Three under the radar trades to fix the 49ers' remaining roster needs. If you could only do one of these three trades, which trade do you like the most? Okay,
here. Ooh, I haven't seen this one.
Yeah, this is, I know, the new trades. It's like, ooh, it's kind of fun. All right, trade number one, 2027 fourth to the Raiders for Michael Mayer.
I don't even need to look at any other ones. Yes, that's what I would do. I would do that in a heartbeat. I think it costs a lot more than a fourth. I love Michael Mayer. Yeah, I love that dude.
Maybe a player and a fourth, but yeah, I would do that one. Here's another one. Caden Bethune and a sixth for Walker Little.
No, I like Vidarian Lowe. I like Walter Little, but I like Vidarian Lowe. I want to see what they got in Enrique Cruz. And I like Tatum Bethune as the number three. I don't think Walter Little plays for the 49ers. I would say no to this one.
Yeah, you know, once again, it's like you don't have endless roster spots. It's not 75-man roster. If you told me that Colt McKivitz or Trent Williams was hurt, then yeah, I'm very interested in this trade, and I probably would consider that a pretty fair trade. But right now, there's no room at the inn. You know, you're going to have a hard enough time rostering Enrique Cruz, let alone finding a spot for Walker Little. So I agree. How about this one? Mac to the Browns for a third-round pick.
I'm going to say no on this, because if you would have traded Mac before the draft and then you could have got a quarterback to come in, a stable kind of number two, that's one thing. Now that Mac is on the roster, going to play out the last year of a deal whenever he signs, you'll probably get a fourth round comp pick back, worst case, just a year delayed. So like, if I could get a top 50 pick for Mac Jones, I would trade him. That being the Browns' third round pick, you're talking 70s, probably, you know, late 60s. So I would hold out. I would not do that trade. The Michael Mayer trade for the tight end, because I think tight end and safety are the two biggest issues on this roster. I would do that trade in a heartbeat. So I would rate the Mac Jones trade number two, and number three, the Walker Little, even though I like Walker Little. I don't think the Niners need him at this point.
Yeah, I mean, come on. You can't get rid of Mac Jones. You know, once again, we'll stop sharing the screen there, and I'll share this. Here we have this one from Mac Jones from the weekend. You can't get rid of Mac Jones, right? There he is.
There it is with the Kittles. My guys, man, that's all. Look how tiny Kittle is, man. All these pictures coming out, he is tiny.
Seriously, Mac Jones looks significantly bigger than Kittle right there. Of course, it's the angle, but yeah, all the more reason for Kittle not to rush back, because he's got to, you know, lift weights and get ready and get his body all ready. But yeah, Mac Jones, I mean, of those trades, Mike.
Oh, I think you just went on mute real quick. Sorry about that, Larry. You just went on mute. Oh, he's still going. Larry, you're on mute, brother. Larry, you're on mute. I love it. Can't hear you. He's in the middle of a freaking tirade. I feel bad we all missed this. You're on mute, Larry.
Have I been muted the whole time?
Yeah, that whole rant. You seem so passionate.
I don't know how to hear Johnny now.
I think it's slipping.
I'm not hearing anything. John, do you hear me?
Yeah, I got
can hear
you,
but I don't hear. I can hear myself. I can't hear you.
You're good. I got you.
Let me move Johnny back. Move him back in there.
What's can you up, hear me? Man? Yeah, you're good.
You can hear me.
Yes, sir.
But I can't hear you.
That's okay.
Can you hear yourself?
I can't.
God, why can't I hear anymore? And suddenly things went wrong.
All right. It's okay.
I have no idea what's going on here.
You're good.
We got this one. Get it, boys. The grind never stops. Anyway, I don't know why I can't hear John.
Oh, man. You
Did
lost
I kick
me.
Out my mic? Did I do something wrong?
Can you guys hear me? Let's get a thumbs up if sure. you guys can hear me.
All right, Johnny. Well, we're right at the end anyway. Thanks to John. John, I can't hear you, but the audience probably can. So promote what you got coming up on your trips and your traveling this year. I wanted to do that, and we didn't get to it in time.
Yeah, so if you're going to any of the 49ers away games this year, we're going to be hosting events day before and tailgate, all-inclusive premium tailgates. Kids are free to every event we ever do. We're going to be in Australia. We're going to be in Mexico City. We're going to the Seattle Seahawks. We're going to be in Dallas, probably the biggest party we've ever thrown. And we're also going to be in Atlanta. So go check it out, 49ersrushroadtrip.com. You can see the times, the events, the days, locations for all those. If you go to any 49ers travel games, come party with us, with the 49ers faithful. We will be there this year, 7 for us. But that's going to do it. So back to Larry here.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us. Can you hear me? You can hear me. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us. We'll call it right here. Thanks to John. Thanks to all of you. Have a great rest of your night. Thanks for supporting The Krug Show. On YouTube. Yeah, never met a man I've been scared of. Careful, you won't.